serving veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, Marshall Soria, just turned 100 years old. Maybe you're one of the nearly 2,000 people who mailed him well wishes for that milestone. Mr. Soria eventually became a cement mason. Candlestick Park in San Francisco was among the countless projects he worked on. He'd go on to have 8 children, 22 grandchildren, 40 great-grandchildren, and 26 great-great-grandchildren and counting. But for all that to happen, he had to survive World War II in Europe as a BAR man with Company C, 110th Infantry Regiment of the 28th Infantry Division. What were your responsibilities as the man carrying that Browning automatic rifle?
Your responsibility to take care of the enemy. You got a rifle that shoots 20, but you shoot that thing, that thing's going to shoot 20 rifles at the same time. But that guy's only shoots one, then they have to shoot again. But now this going to whatever you want to shoot. It just depends how you... You can run out of ammo if you want, but you run out of what the hell you'll do then. Because I told the sergeant, because, you know, we had a lot of boys there. They were afraid. I was afraid, but not as afraid as the poor kids were. And the sergeant, when you tell you, hey, you pick up so many guys, so to go with you in the patrol, and other, some guys are afraid. Mm-hmm. And when you get afraid, a person is afraid, it makes you bad for everybody. Put you in danger. Being that I had to, everybody, you just say, hey, sorry, come over here.
You know, when you talked about being assigned the BAR, we had this thought of, well, that puts a bigger target on your back, too.
That's right.
Were there times where you experienced that, where fire was directed at you?
Yeah.
Can you give me some examples or help us understand what that's like?
Like, for example, when we're in an open space, pushing through, and then your 88s are coming in. And you don't know where they're going to hit. But one thing they told us, keep moving. But some of the guys freeze. With that, it freezes you. Kind of, you keep on going. You used to say, don't stay there. If you stay there 1 or 2 seconds, that guy's going to take the second time. The first time I miss you, but he's not going to miss you the second time. Because they're aiming. But if you go forward, you're upsetting their range. The range is overtaking you, and you're ahead of the range.
Right.
And they have to adjust to their range. So that's a lot of things you have to learn in training.
But some guys would freeze up because they heard the shells coming
in? Yeah.
How close do you think stuff came to you?
Well, just like whipping in the machine gun. You're taking a machine gun. They got... Then the 88, mostly the machine guns. It's all right when you're down, because they won't hit you very much when you're down, because they up to a level that you can get away with it, but not, don't trust it too much. And then I used to tell the guys, keep on running stuff, because then you see them fall, what the hell are you going to do? Keep on going. Nothing you can do.
That's got to be hard.
It is. And then when you see the guy fall, you don't know what to think. That's what gets you afterwards. It gets you. Like when we were in Colma, when you go in there, and then you see the guys with the triggers picking up the dead guys like a wood. It's like a wood. Well, that was their job, picking up, cleaning up. Your body ain't worth nothing. That gets you. Gets you in your mind.
That wears on you.
It gets you afterwards.
Because life was valued so little.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you get any letters from your wife while you were over there?
A couple, 2 or 3. She was mad.
She was mad that you left? Well, I'm sure there were nights where you wondered if you did the right thing, huh?
Sometimes you felt about it, yeah. Well, I said, it had to happen, What the heck? I made it through, God was good enough to bring me through. Then we started walking. When Colmar was secured, we started from Colmar to the Rhine. How far is it? From Comart to Aachen, taking prisoners of war, cleaning up the towns. You go in and clean it up and keep on going. We put in 32 miles. They registered it was 32 miles in 2 days, full fuel pack.
With a BAR for you.
only God knows. That's why I say only God knows why he's got me here. I don't know.
How did you feel about the enemy?
Well, first it was bad because they had all old-timers. And then it was kids, 18, 19. You get them kids that didn't even know how to use a rifle. They start taking them prisoners of war. It was all right. I walked into Hawking. It's all right. Before I got a telegram, that kid was born. I was in the Cologne there before the Maigon Bridge and the Cologne Church there right in front of the
cathedral that somehow stayed intact?
Intact, but they bombed it afterwards.
Well, I don't want you to gloss over that. So here you are. Your wife is mad at you because you leave her behind. You go off to war. You and your brother are both over there risking your lives. You've been through the Battle of the Bulge. You cleaned up the Colmar Pocket. And now you get to Aachen, which I'm sure is decimated. And you get a telegram that you're a father.
Yeah.
What goes through your mind in a situation like that when you get that news?
When I got that news, I told him, well, you know what to do? We'll just baptize him. And I don't know. I'm still going to make it. I don't know what's going to happen. Just baptize him. I don't think I'm going to make it because it looks like it's getting rough every day.
So you're questioning whether you're ever going to get to meet your son.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that way it was going. I said, well, it's pretty hard to say that you're going to make it when you're going through a lot of, it could happen any minute. You go into the bunkers or go through the houses, cleaning up all that junk. You know who's in there, what they're going to shoot you with. Because they left behind a lot of guys just to hold you up. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys behind and just take care of them. You go in there, they could just, it could happen anytime. When we got to the Rhine, they put the Phantom Bridge right in front of Cologne. It was right in front of the cathedral. We stood guard for the guys to go. It took Patna about 6-7 days to pass. When they passed the Rhine, they went towards Czechoslovakia, and that's when they started spreading out. That's when they hit concentration camps.
Right.
Yeah. Because my brother went to Czechoslovakia. He was in the 26th and all. There were a lot of divisions.
Did you ever get any updates on how he was or what he was doing?
No. No. Well, after the war, he came over. See, he was in the bot right in the center of it. 26th got hit. 28th got hit. All the divisions. And they didn't take no credit for nothing. 101st got the credit for that.
Yeah.
But they hold him for so many days with the rifle and the machine guns and all they had. My brother said they ran. They were running all over scared, and all those guys were dressed in uniform. United States, speaking English.
The Germans were?
Mm-hmm. Right before the balls, they slaughtered 40 or 50 guys. They just got the machine guns and took their uniforms off. Took their uniforms and gave them to them.
You talking about Malmedy?
Huh? Malmedy.
Uh-huh. Well, I don't want to miss the end there. So you get to the Rhine.
We helped them cross.
Yeah.
But we went straight through. We went to Germany, Berlin. We were about 20 kilometers from Berlin when they stopped us, tanks and everything. They were waiting for Russia to get in there.
Yeah.
We could have gone in Berlin, but in the meantime, we were going down, we were cleaning up this and that, rivers and all that thing. But it still was, I want to thank God for everything he done. I can't forget that damn frozen thing. It's in my mind, been in my mind all the time.
Well, that would get me. When you guys heard Germany surrendered, VE Day. Was there some celebration at that news?
No, Eisenhower told us, when you get across the Rhine, I'll send you a bottle of champagne. And he did. You see that the bottle of champagne, a certain day, a certain hour, so everybody enjoy it together.
Uh-huh.
At a certain hour, a certain day, he sent the champagne to everybody in all of our companies, division, everything. And everybody, I don't remember what day it was.
How did that taste?
He was all right. He was all right.
I know this sounds like a silly question, but I think it helps us understand what you went through, what it was really like. Is there a moment that you look back from those months over there in combat that you say, hey, that was my closest call? That's where it could have been me?
Yeah. When I froze, because I was gone.
Yeah, you passed out. Huh?
I don't know how. If I would have waited 15, 20 minutes, I think it would have gotten that. I don't know.
If you would have stayed in the hole longer.
It's a thing longer.
Yeah.
Your heart can't take that much. I don't know. You would have frozen your heart or frozen something.
Your whole body was feeling frozen and you had a hard time moving.
Then when I passed out, I said, well, the poor kids. One was from Seattle, Washington, one from St. Paul, Minnesota. I can't forget them guys.
The guys who pulled you up the hill?
Yeah, I can't forget them guys.
Well, without them, your wife would have been a widow. Your son wouldn't have had a father. The rest of your kids and grandkids, great-grandkids wouldn't have been born.
Nobody would have been a problem there is now.
What was the hardest thing you had to deal with over there?
You don't know what the heck you were going into. I didn't know what the heck what I was going to go into. I didn't even know nothing. What are you going to do? What am I going to go in there? Just going in there. I said, well, it's my turn now. What the heck? We're lucky I didn't go the first night, but it would have happened. But now, I look back. I've been going to France and seeing them kids thanking you for what you did.
Going back to France after the war.
Yeah.
And even the young people know one of the liberators.
Yeah.
Well, what was it like to come back? To come back to the States?
Well, we just came back. Well, I'm going to see my family.
To meet your son for the first time? What was that like?
Oh, yeah. That was when I got home first time. Good thing was that the war was over when I was home. Because we were the last guys to go in, and we had lost points. And they were going by points. So they shipped into the 2nd Division. When they dissolved the 28th Division, the ship was back in July with intentions of having to go to Camp Shelby, Mississippi, and training for Japan. That's when I went home. They sent us home, and the atomic bomb was born. So when I went to back to Camp Shelby, they started dissolving the 28th, and they sent me to the 2nd Division.
Was it hard for you to transition back from being an Army man and now you're a civilian again?
Yeah, it was hard. In other words, you get a lot of thinking, start thinking a lot, especially at nighttime, especially when you get dizzy spells.
Does that still happen to you, or it stopped after a while?
It stopped. Took quite a while. I became an alcoholic.
Trying to drink that away?
I quit that thing in 1953. Quit everything, because I was bad. I joined Alcoholics Anonymous, helped me a lot. I missed on the GI Bill with that drinking. In 50, I enlisted in Master of Mechanic and Aviation. I went there about 6 months in the GI Bill.
Uh-huh.
Master of Mechanic and Aviation. 28 months, you were a Master Mechanic. Then at that time, the Air Force was just beginning.
Yeah.
But drinking went from Missoula, and I ended up in Cement Mason. I started as a laborer. I put in 20 years in with one company. Then I said, what the heck? I went to college and finished. Got me blueprint reading, estimating, and all that time they need for construction. I applied for my own license. Then I got my own license, and we went on our own.
And you know, I grew up a big San Francisco Giants fan, and I remember some of those cold, chilly nights at Candlestick Park. So I have you to blame for some of that?
No. We covered it up. It said they were going to clear, but then they cleared it up. We closed it.
Uh-huh.
The bus that would just be open, we closed it up. We closed it up.
You closed it up.
Yeah.
Did you ever think you were going to live to be 100?
Hell no. Not the way it was going. Not where I was going.
What do you give that credit to?
My good Lord. That's the only thing I can say. I was over about 98% gone. He didn't take me.
That night you were freezing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the closest I came. I didn't expect this darn thing. That was all that Jenko went through.
I know it's been a few years now, but you got to go with Central Valley Honor Flight to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
To see the World War II Memorial and a bunch of other cool stuff.
Yeah, it was nice. What I didn't like is all the stars that we lost, all the men that we lost. That's the saddest part of all the poor guys that got there.
Yeah, they've got 4,000 gold stars up there because that's 406,000 who died. What were you thinking about when you were looking at that?
Oh, you can imagine. I sacrificed myself. He wanted an actual little bit and one of them. I thank God that, he had different ideas for me.
Amen. Apparently he still does.
With all the work we went through, I don't know how. I can't believe this.
So a few weeks ago, your family got the word out, hey, Dad's turning 100, send him a birthday card. So I think since then you've gotten a card or two.
1,000 or something. He's going to sell it.
You've gotten over 1,000 birthday cards.
Yes.
What does that mean to you, that people you know and also people that you don't know?
People that we know.
From all over the place?
All over.
How does that make you feel?
Wonderful.
So when you signed up for the Army, you weren't a citizen yet.
No.
When you came home from the war and saw your wife again and met your son for the first time, now you're a U.S. citizen?
Yeah. When they gave me the discharge, they gave me the citizenship.
What did that mean to you?
Oh, that's what I tell these guys. You go over there and go on this. You could earn a citizenship. Go put your life ahead of land, then you know you love your country.
What do you think the significance is of what you and 16 million Americans did in World War II? Why should it still matter to us today?
Well, those guys were in bad shape. France, Belgium, all those countries, Poland, all of them were all conquered. They're all conquered. They had to do what that guy said. Now they live in peace. If we hadn't gone to come over there and liberate them guys, good thing we did.
So you got treated pretty well when you went back there,
yeah.
Huh?
You go over there, well, you get treated pretty well. In fact, if you wear that badge, you don't have to pay for nothing.
If there's anything else I didn't ask you about, feel free to share, but I want to say thank you. Thank you for serving our country, and thank you for sharing your story with us. Is there something that at 100 years old you would say that you're most proud of or most thankful for?
Oh, my family, they respect me. Thank God.
Anything else you want to say?
Thank you for everything you've done, and say hello. Say thank you to all the guys that sent me the mail.
There you have it. If you're one of the many who sent Marshall Soria birthday wishes for hitting the century mark, consider yourself thanked. You'll find photos and a short video with Mr. Soria online at hometownheroesradio.com or on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. And I hope you'll join us again next time when we're reminded again through the stories of our veterans that freedom is not free.